Films in Focus with David Sterrett is underwritten by The Movie House, your destination for first-run Hollywood and independent movies, and a digital portal to the Met Opera, National Theater Live, and special events worldwide in Millerton, New York, and on the web, themoviehouse.net.
David Sterrett is the former chair of the New York Film Critics Circle and National Society of Film Critics, contributing writer at Cineast, film professor at the Maryland Institute College of Art, and Robin Hood Radio's very own critic. He joins us weekly. The films are Reading Lolita in Tehran, Her Private Hell, and Middle Life.
I'd like to start off today with a movie with a really, really good title, Reading Lolita in Tehran. I think that's a really excellent title. One reason is because I really admire Vladimir Nabokov's novel Lolita. And another reason is that the whole idea of reading a book like Lolita, which obviously is very, very controversial in all kinds of ways, in a place like Tehran in Iran is a provocative idea. It's based on a memoir, the movie is, that was also titled Reading Lolita in Tehran. The writer of that memoir is the main character of the movie. So what we're doing is following her adventures, if we can call them that, over quite a number of years. The movie spans many, many years. It doesn't always suggest the transitions from one time period to another as plainly and interestingly as it might, but it does span a whole lot of years. And it is about this young woman and what happens to her when she tries, among other things, to have some students of hers read Lolita in Tehran. I have to say, it's so interesting to have this movie arrive when the United States is, of course, involved in horrific warfare with Iran. And anyway, I have to mention right now that Iran itself has one of the most humane and uplifting and marvelous film industries in the world. It has for many years. Many, many wonderful films have come out of Iran over the past few decades. And that's a real contrast to how I think many Americans currently or maybe ever think about Iran. But it has a wonderful film industry. This movie, however, was directed by an Israeli filmmaker named Aaron Ricklis. And anyway, it's a very, very interesting movie in various ways. Not a great film, but a very interesting one. So we have the main character whose name is Nafisi. She is played by Gulchifte Farahani. And again, we follow her across almost 25 years. And she is an academic. She's a young woman who wants to have a career as a scholar. And so she goes to Tehran with her husband just after the Islamic Revolution of 1979, and she takes a job at the university there. So that's very, very nice, and there's really a lot of hope there that this revolution, which of course is when Ayatollah Khomeini took over the country, will mean very good things. But for a young woman like our main character, Nafisi, this is not to be. She wants to teach Western literature. And of course, one of the great goals of the 1979 revolution in Iran was to get rid of Western influences, especially American influences, but Western influences, English-speaking influences generally. So Nafisi really has a tough path cut out for her. She wants to teach books like Pride and Prejudice by Jane Austen and The Great Gatsby by F. Scott Fitzgerald and Huckleberry Finn by Mark Twain and Lolita by Vladimir Nabokov, a Russian, of course, but he wrote that book in English. So anyway, that's what she wants to do. And the movie is divided into chapters like a book. And many of those chapters are, I guess all those chapters actually are named after those various books that she wants to teach. So not surprisingly, Nafisi gets into real trouble quite early on. Part of the thing has to do simply with the way she dresses. She doesn't want to wear a hijab. She doesn't want to wear a headscarf to cover her hair. She feels that there's no reason why she should be forced to do this. Yet at one point, she is denied entry to her own university because she refuses to cover her hair. Well, obviously that's going to have to change. So yes, she starts covering her hair and she goes on with her work, but she still runs into all kinds of problems with what she wants to teach. And there are even demonstrations outside the university. We see somebody carrying a sign saying purify the curriculum, which means getting rid of English and Western influences and wearing headscarves and all that sort of thing. So That's the dilemma that Nafisi is in, and what she does, to, not exactly to solve this dilemma, but to keep her own life and career going in a way, she gets together a small number of female students. There are seven of them, and they decide they are going to meet in secret, just at her apartment. They're going to meet in private, and they are going to read these Western books, and they are going to discuss them, and they're going to draw their own conclusions about these books. And one of those books is, in fact, Lolita by the great Vladimir Nabokov, and so that's what the movie largely deals with. I don't mean it's all about those sessions they have, but that's one of the things it's about. And going behind the entire story is this idea of having personal freedom, like not having to cover your hair when you go out in the street, and intellectual freedom, academic freedom, freedom of thought, namely reading books that you want to read, discussing them with people you want to discuss them with, and that sort of thing. So this is obviously a very deeply political movie in that way, but it's not about political people. It's about simply a young woman, a young scholar, a young academic who really, well, she's not so young by the time the movie ends, but who really just wants to pursue her career, to pursue her interests, and to do things that are considered normal in almost all universities and almost all nations around the world, but which she is not allowed to do at various times in her own country of Iran. By the end of the movie, I will reveal she gets out of Iran, and you think that's probably a wise decision on her part. Anyway, reading Lolita in Tehran is, again, as I said, as I often say, not a great movie, but it's a very, very good movie. It's beautifully acted, it's very nicely put together, and I really had a good time watching it. I want to add just one more thing. Only the first part of the movie takes place immediately after the 1979 revolution in Iran. Then again, we cover almost 25 years and we end up in the United States at the very, very end of the movie, a sort of epilogue. Seeing the huge banners of Ayatollah Khomeini hanging in front of buildings reminded me of the banners of Donald Trump, which are hanging in front of various buildings in Washington, D.C. nowadays. So, again, it's a political movie in all kinds of ways. Mainly, it's about politics in Iran, but I think that it has certain implications for politics elsewhere, including the United States of America. So, that's a movie which is, in many ways, kind of normal. It's a good movie again. Now I want to talk to a movie which is not normal because it's by a filmmaker who simply doesn't much like to make normal movies. It's called Her Private Hell, and it was directed by Nicholas Winding Refn, who is a Scandinavian filmmaker, although for quite a long while now he's been making works in the English language. And Her Private Hell is very much like what Refn's work has been for a long time now, which is to say, it's really, really slow and really, really strange. Refn is probably best known in the United States, at least by American moviegoers, for a movie he made back in 2011 called Drive with Ryan Gosling. It's a good movie, but it's also comparatively normal. Starting soon after that, mainly with a movie called Only God Forgives, Refn started to make movies that were very, very strange, surrealistic, dreamlike, and he's been doing that ever since. I've taken an interest in Refn's films, including a couple of miniseries that he made, one called Too Old to Die Young, another one called Copenhagen Cowboy, and also a whole lot of feature films that he's done. And again, his work has grown more and more surrealistic over the years. Surrealism being the kind of art that draws its raw material from the world of dreams. And that is very much what Nicholas Winding Refn does in pretty much all of his movies for, well, for a very long time now, quite a long number of years. It has been said by some that Her Private Hell, his new movie, is sort of based on a British movie from back in the late 1960s, also called Her Private Hell. There's almost no resemblance, take it from me. The new movie, Her Private Hell, is very much a work in its own terms. It's very much the kind of surrealist work that Refn makes, and it's a very, very strange and bizarre movie. It's a specialty item. So what is it about? Okay, basically, it is about it takes place in the future. In a way, it's a sort of a science fiction movie. And we have a futuristic city, and we have a mysterious fog, a mysterious mist that has engulfed everything. And in the middle of this confusion, some young women meet each other, get together. One of them has just arrived at this big building in this futuristic city where she's going to make a movie with another one of the women who is there. And then they meet an American soldier who is very much sort of a refugee from World War II for some reason. He seems to be at least. We meet a very, very threatening person, a very evil person called the Leatherman. And so, anyway, these various characters interact in various ways. And as I keep saying, it's very, very dreamlike. Now, the thing about Nicholas Winding Refn's work is that, in my opinion, he has been totally taken over by David Lynch. By David Lynch when Lynch was still alive and making movies. And now, maybe by the ghost of David Lynch. Because, well, for quite a number of years now, Refn's movies have reminded me of nothing more than the most bizarre work of David Lynch. A movie like Inland Empire, for example, one of Lynch's last movies, or maybe even Blue Velvet, which is a sort of a semi-normal movie by David Lynch. Anyway, Refn really, really resembles in his work, the surrealist, dreamlike nature of many of David Lynch's movies. So if you like David Lynch, Her Private Hell, the new movie by Nicholas Winding Refn, is definitely a movie to go see because it is very much in that mold. But for other people, I have to say it is very, very slow. Refn loves slow cinema, slow motion movie making. It's nicely acted, I guess, but since the story is so strange and the characters are so bizarre, it's sort of hard to tell. I had an interesting time watching it. I can't say I felt swept up in it. I can't even say it's one of Refn's best movies. But again, if you're interested in the surrealist, dreamlike possibilities of modern movies, then Private Hell might be the movie for you. And finally, I'd like to talk about a Canadian movie called Middle Life. This is written and directed by Pavamundi, and it's just a nice, sweet, gentle movie, a real contrast to the other films I've talked about. It's a very sort of adorable little movie. It's kind of a romantic comedy, it's kind of a rom-com, but in a way, it's a drama too, because not all of it is meant to be all that funny, but I think it's all meant to be kind of just sweet and even adorable. I actually found it a little bit too adorable for its own good. It tries too hard to be lovable, but it's a nice movie, and I had a reasonably good time watching it. So, Middle Life is about a young woman who is married. Her name is Andy, and she's married to a guy, and their marriage just doesn't seem to be all that solid. They get along okay, but they don't seem to like each other all that much. Her name is Andy, her husband's name is Chris, and it seems to be sort of a bland blah sort of a marriage, even though they're only in their 30s. The movie is called Middle Life, but that apparently means being in your 30s in this film. So, Andy meets a guy named Ryan, and I can't exactly call it a cute meet. She meets Ryan when she's driving down a highway and she sees a horrific car accident just happened in the night. One of the cars is completely overturned, and she manages to call for help. And so Ryan and his father, their lives are saved. And then later on, she meets Ryan again. They get together and they start to strike up a relationship. Now, Andy is still married to her husband, Chris, so that's very nice. Okay. But now she's start seeing a lot of Ryan. And at first, it's not really a romance. It doesn't appear that anything physical is happening between them, even kissing and stuff like that. But they're meeting a lot. They're getting together a lot. They're having coffee. They're going out. They're doing this and that. And you start to wonder if Andy might be starting to move toward the end of her marriage with Chris. We see Chris from time to time. He puts up with this for a while. And then he starts to get grumpy about all the time she's meeting this guy, Ryan. Then they have Ryan over to dinner so that the two guys can meet each other. And that doesn't go awfully well. So that kind of thing happens. And then I won't give away too much here, but somewhere around the middle of the movie, roughly speaking, Ryan wants to do something really spontaneous, and he talks Andy into doing something really spontaneous too. And so they fly from Canada down to the United States. They go to Los Angeles and they have various adventures there. And you're wondering all the time if the marriage between Andy and Chris is going to survive this. And you're also wondering whether the marriage should survive this. Again, it's always seemed kind of a bland blah marriage for quite a while anyway. Now, there are problems with Middle Life as a movie, as a story. For one thing, Andy and her husband, Chris, have kids, and they play almost no part in the movie, a little tiny part, but my gosh, I mean, when you're young and you have a family and you're in your 30s, a kid is really, really a very, very big deal. So I wish that had been in the movie more. It would have made the whole thing more realistic and maybe added a bit more tension. But as far as it goes, Middle Life is just a nice movie. Lea Faye Goldstein is very, very good as Andy, although I was much more fond of Peter Drymanis as Ryan. Actually, his performance I thought was way better than the female lead in the movie. And the minor roles are filled reasonably well. Mike D. Smith as the old and very sort of PTSD'd father from that car accident. Chris Lalonde is good as Chris, although the role is not developed very much. So it's a nice, sweet, gentle, I think, two adorable little movie that tries very hard to be liked. It's an easy movie to like, and I hope it does find an audience. It's a nice antidote to so many of the action movies and the bizarre stuff that's floating across the screen nowadays and the overblown stuff. If anything, Middle Life is underblown, which is to say, it doesn't hit you in the face with anything. It just moves along at its own gentle little pace, and it's a mildly interesting and amusing and entertaining movie to watch. So I'm past my middle life, but I enjoyed watching this middle life, and that is my middle life type story this week.
For which we thank you, as always, David Sterrett. Films in Focus, the films Reading Lolita in Tehran, Her Private Hell, and Middle Life.
Films in Focus with David Sterrett is underwritten by The Movie House, your destination for first-run Hollywood and independent movies, and a digital portal to the Met Opera, National Theater Live, and special events worldwide in Millerton, New York, and on the web, themoviehouse.net.